You're listening to The Wake Up Reads with Alex Fetzke, the show where I read the best articles, excerpts, and essays from the world of Bitcoin, philosophy, and contrarian thinking.
Bitcoin, the networked messiah. From deep inside the web, a new godhead is arising. Within its face, changing color and shape, we see a mosaic of our own images. Welcome to episode 5 of The Wake Up Reads. And on today's episode, on this week's episode, we've got the latest piece by Nozomi Hayase. Some of you may recognize that name. She was on a podcast with me probably, I think, 6 or 7 months ago, actually. It was right before, I remember actually I was in Denver at the time freezing my ass off. And I think it would have been mid to late November. And it was right before Thanksgiving, or it was right on Thanksgiving. I remember because I was there with my woman and she had cooked me some amazing food that day. So yeah, coming back to the actual point, I got lost in the timing there. Nozomi and I did an incredible podcast back then, and it was right in the midst of me writing the original Remnant pieces. So it's kind of fitting that the first article that I'm reading outside of my own here is Nozomi's piece. And this one, she just dropped on May 27th, which is very recent. In fact, I'm the 29th as I'm reading this. And I decided that I should absolutely read this and do a bit of a take at the end of it. So without further ado, I'm going to kick this sucker off and then we'll discuss the article at the end of the read. Let's begin. Bitcoin, the networked messiah. From deep inside the web, a new godhead is arising. Within its face, changing color and shape, we see a mosaic of our own images. By Nozomi Hayase. From economic instability and wars to ecological catastrophe, humanity now faces major global challenges. These social, political, and environmental issues signal a crisis in the modern world and its ethical foundation. Jungian psychologist Anne Baring, who studied the development of the system of faith in Western civilization, recognized the change of the imagery of deity from feminine to masculine, great mother to great father, at a particular historical time around 2000 BCE. She described how the shift has led to a polarization in human consciousness, creating destructive effects in our culture. After the shift, emphasis was placed on masculine qualities, such as value judgment and ordering, and on goal-driven energy associated with mind or intellect. This dominance of the masculine devalued feminine attributes, such as instinct, relationship, and the feeling, heart, that acknowledges intrinsic connections between all beings. As this schism in the image of the divine continues to devastate our society, a force of balance has emerged from the internet. Bitcoin, the breakthrough of computer science, has opened a pathway to reunite the masculine and feminine principles. Monopoly on faith. Judeo-Christian tradition established monotheistic religions, with the elements of the feminine fast receding into the background. It derived its authority from the recorded word of God, historically curated by one of those considered the spiritual leaders of the community. With a one-sided image of God acting exclusively as a force for good, the Orthodox Judeo-Christian religions directed people's moral conduct onto what was considered to be the righteous path. In the modern era, this patriarchal structure of morality came to be maintained through a political system of monarchy and through the king's control of money, later transferred to a loyal, charter-backed private bank. Attorney and researcher Ellen Brown, in her book Web of Debt, describes how the establishment of the Bank of England in 1694 gave power to the bankers to create money out of thin air. This was the beginning of the central banking system, which has since spread around the world. It found its way into the US in 1913 through the creation of the Federal Reserve. Author Edward Griffin, in The Creature from Jekyll Island, elucidates how, despite its name, the Federal Reserve is not an agency of the federal government, but is a private corporation chartered by Congress. He described it as a banking cartel that was designed to serve the bankers and politicians. This cartel entered into an agreement with the government. Through their secret partnership, the US dollar, as a form of Federal Reserve note has become an instrument of control, enabling usury and theft in the form of taxation through inflation. Most significantly, through this installation of a central banking system in the US, the force of hierarchy that denies an individual's freedom of conscience has expanded. This penetrated the wall of separation between church and state that the founders put in place in the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment as a safeguard against the creation of a state dominated by the church. Doctrine of corporatism. As society became more secular, the church began to lose its influence. With government subsidies and the growth of monopolies eliminating competition, industries that accumulated capital gained enormous power. With this, a stifling of values associated with a feminine god was brought about by what essayist John Ralston Saul refers to as corporatism. This suppression is effected through the hierarchical nature of corporate structures that bind people into an ideology which claims rationality as its central quality. Corporations as artificial entities are programmed through their terms of incorporation and through law to pursue ever-increasing wealth for executives and shareholders. They have long been used as a vehicle by the rich and powerful, driven by the rationale of profit at any cost, to create an extractive consumer economy. Using commercially driven corporate science that aims to dominate nature, scientists and technologists of recent times have become a new class of priests. Through applying Darwinian biology and behaviorism, they have engineered abstract social morals that are dualistic and then use them to manipulate people's instinct and habits. Through media narratives that condemn qualities of independence and individual autonomy as selfishness, pitting them against attributes such as collaboration and kindness, the system preys on people's empathy to enforce conformity. In a society that adheres to a dogma of corporatism, human beings have been reduced to a kind of domesticated animal. Denied agency, people are pushed to respond to external stimuli, both carrot and stick, and act out of compulsion. As the greed of the few atop institutional hierarchies begin to fuel corruption, Bitcoin came forward to challenge this rigged game of the survival of the fittest. The cypherpunks' holy grail. The creation of Bitcoin was the holy grail for cypherpunks, a loosely connected online group that advocated for social change through use of strong cryptography. In his essay titled "The Moral Character of Cryptographic Work," Philip Rogoway, professor of computer science, pointed out a significant shift in the scientific community's engagement with ethics after World War II. Whereas scientific work in previous decades had aimed at being detached politically and divorced from the moral dimension, Rogoway noted a change in direction occurring. An increasing number of scientists and engineers started to engage in issues of social responsibility and to attempt to actively develop technology in a way that was aligned to their perception of human values and priorities. Within the Bitcoin project, cypherpunks revitalized the moral impulse in cryptographic work. Like knights of the Brotherhood who set out to rescue a princess from the dragon, they mobilized in cyberspace using asymmetric encryption as a shield. By successfully using cryptographic proof to eliminate a need to trust central authority, they unlocked the values that had been captured by the hierarchical network of central banks. Principle of interconnectedness. The creation of Bitcoin restored the feminine principle of interconnectedness. It is an intelligence of the heart that embraces all dynamics of life without creating a value hierarchy. It maintains a balance of all impulses of human nature, making sure that some forces do not become dominant. Enshrined in Bitcoin's consensus algorithm is this wisdom of the heart. Known as proof of work, it is used as a coordination mechanism to facilitate Bitcoin mining, a process that involves both creation of money and clearing of transactions. Here's a brief description of how mining works. This is a quote from a prior article, I believe. Quote, in an open and transparent network where rules are applied to everyone equally, computers around the world called miners engage in a broadcast math competition. Rules of the game are fixed and made clear at the outset. They include a total quantity of Bitcoin that can never be created. Math caps the monetary base at 21 million Bitcoin. A predictable issuance rate, and automatic adjustment of difficulty of the mining. In order to earn Bitcoin, everyone has to follow the rules of the game and do the work, use precious resources that are necessary to solve problems. Each 10 minutes, problems are solved, and whoever solves the problem first wins a fixed number of Bitcoins. End quote. Guided by the heart's intelligence, Bitcoin's decentralized network allows all forces of nature to enter freely. Whereas the centralized fiat system reserves the value of individuality for those at the top of the hierarchy, managing and controlling ordinary people's acts of self-interest, Bitcoin removes this restriction and distributes it throughout the network. At the same time, by aligning everyone's self-interests, it places personal interest in relation to the interests of the whole network. This way, the technology ensures that self-seeking tendencies do not get isolated, becoming hostile, antisocial impulses. The genius of incentive structure. The intelligence of the heart, while being neutral to all forces of life, holds the tension of the opposite that arises. It spontaneously establishes an order. Being modeled after nature's ingenious architecture, Bitcoin's elegant economic incentives contain contrasting impulses of human action without applying pressure. It makes seemingly diametric tendencies such as self-interest and mutual aid compatible as a form of reciprocal altruism. To act in favor of others is to increase the likelihood of repayment in the future. The way that Bitcoin does this is through its encouragement to check one's self-interest by appealing to one's self-interest itself with creative use of rewards. Bitcoin's unique monetary design sets rewards in a way that makes it more beneficial for one to play honestly and collaborate, i.e. to play by the rules, than for one to attack the network. With its built-in scarcity, a deflationary nature is built into the Bitcoin protocol. Issuance that decreases every 4 years guarantees an increase of its value. Also, mining difficulty is adjusted according to demand, with a tight feedback loop every 2 weeks, ensuring that mining is always profitable. With this feature, rather than a narrow short-sightedness, one is encouraged to hold a long-term view of the consequences of actions and to subdue the desire for instant gratification. The system incentivizes economically rational actors to recognize the benefit of cooperating with the network and to voluntarily choose to follow the rules of consensus. Fierce and brutal competition between miners does not dominate or squash altruistic impulses, such as the act of collaboration and sharing. Rather, it increases these values by creating a solid foundation whereby greed can bring in more resources and energies that are used to secure the entire network. The return of the goddess. Through the protocol of Bitcoin, the goddess that was once disappeared was brought back to our civilization. Who is this female god that is now reappearing? She's the inspiration behind the ideas of the Enlightenment. Thomas Jefferson acknowledged her as nature's god in the Declaration of Independence. She who granted people unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. She is a mother of exiles, a mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning. Through a computer scripting language, she began to speak again. Quote, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Emma Lazarus in The New Colossus. Through linking the knowledge of mathematics with the wisdom of nature, Bitcoin reinstituted a balance between masculine and feminine values. This sacred union now awakens faith within ordinary people, allowing them to believe in their ability to self-determine their own lives. The invention of Bitcoin made separation of money from the state possible for the first time in our history. Freed from a centralized image of God and the imposed moralism, we can now find within ourselves the authority to guide our own actions. In a network that enables freedom for all participants, we can follow our own instinct and can transform that into moral intuition. By each choosing to abide by the rule of consensus, sovereign individuals can now form relationships in harmony with one another without external compulsion. From deep inside the web, a new godhead is arising. Within its face, changing color and shape every 10 minutes, we see a mosaic of our own images, a networked messiah capable of saving humanity and giving birth to a new world. We find God in ourselves and in each other. So there we have it. Nozomi Hayase's piece, which is fucking amazing. I mean, I want to dig into a whole bunch of sections here. I think where I'll start is towards the end. I mean, for me, she tied it off really well. There's parts in this piece where I'd like to add some nuance and probably a couple of things which on the surface I disagree with. But once we put a little bit of nuance in there, you'll sort of understand where my disagreement comes from. Particularly if you listen to my podcast generally, you'll know what my position is on things like order, etc. But I think first and foremost is the premise, I think, of this essay, and at least this is my interpretation, knowing Nozomi's sort of philosophical standpoint, is that, number one, if there is a God, or whatever description of God we want to use, God is the symbiosis, and this is my language, God is the symbiosis of the feminine and the masculine in one. And you will have heard me speak in the past about this, the movement from, we go from the essence or the meta that is Christianity, right? So the philosophy itself, through to the religion of Christianity, which is interpretation. And there can be many religions, there can be many, i.e. interpretations of Christianity. And then you have the institutionalization of the religion of the philosophy itself. And when you're that far removed, you begin to get a little bit far away from you know, what the essence of the original teachings were, the essence of the original meta. And one could argue that the shadow side of the masculine was this stale, more static structure in the institutionalization of these ideas, which moved it into perhaps the shadow side of the masculine. And in many ways, I guess, suffocated out the feminine interconnectedness that the Godhead should represent, because the Godhead should represent both. Now, in saying that, like, you know, that there's an argument there, like, you know, Old Testament God, at least from my understanding, is, you know, is quite masculine in nature, quite brutal, quite consequential. And I think the feminine nature is a lot more, I guess, nurturing, forgiving. And I guess that, you know, the forgiving side is probably the feminine side of God. So anyway, the I think where I'm trying to get to here is that what Bitcoin represents is something more pure, is because it has both masculine and feminine in it. And this is something I want to dive into with Nozomi on a future podcast, actually, is I want to dig into this idea that Bitcoin not only fuses physics with metaphysics, but it's at the juncture of all of these things, chaos and order. It is at the juncture of masculine and feminine, of dark and light, of all of these things. And I think, I guess the best definition you could give of something like nature or something like God is that which embodies both of these chaos and order type elements. So other than the masculine feminine fusion that Bitcoin and the true essence of God represents, I think the other powerful message here from Nozomi is that instinct, and I know she's big on instinct. We had this conversation about nature versus nurture, right? And instinct being extraordinarily important, something that transcends training or transcends conditioning, right? And instinct is extraordinarily moral because it's just something that is biologically fused into us. It's not something that is taught to us afterwards. And this comes back to that whole nature versus nurture discussion. So I think that's a strong piece of what I want to pull out of this, is that Bitcoin reinstitutes a balance between masculine and feminine and moves us back towards instinctual behavior, which is in itself like a moral intuition. It's not something that, you know, you need to use institutions to enforce on people, which is where we've gone wrong. So now, anyway, I want to pull on a couple of things. So she mentions, you know, we've got all these crises that we need to deal with, and the, you know, a shift in the emphasis away from masculine and feminine, which we mentioned at the beginning of pulling this apart, is that, yes, I think we have moved away. Now, the feminine is, you know, the feminine qualities are not really leadership. Like, when I think of leadership, I think of masculine, that is a masculine quality. You know, the feminine nurtures such that the masculine can lead. And I guess in some ways, the church or religion itself emerged as some form of institution that could help order society. And ordering is not bad. She kind of takes a jab in this piece here around this idea of like order and hierarchy. And if you've read any of my stuff, particularly recently, I've been banging on about hierarchy. In fact, Jordan Peterson, I think, is the king of discussing this idea of hierarchy, other than he misses the one point, the nuance between fiat and, I guess, organic hierarchy. He misses that insofar as he makes the case for the Pareto distribution and the imbalances that can occur from the natural rich get richer, poor get poorer sort of distribution. He misses the fact that organic natural hierarchies rebalance because there's a washout of the system. You know, that happens organically unless you defraud the system and you build hierarchies of fiat. And I think the nuance here, which I didn't read in the article, but me knowing Nozomi, I know she gets, so I want to elucidate this, is that the hierarchies that we have a fucking problem with are those that are fixed and static. Dynamic hierarchies, emergent hierarchies, hierarchies of competence are not static, and they're extremely fucking important because one must prioritize. And this is a very masculine thing. This is a very focused thing. And when we're talking about structure and order and standards, that is extraordinarily masculine. And that is, I think, a fucking good thing. We need to have a structure. When you want to build a house, you need to build it on granite. You need to build it on something that doesn't fucking move. You build it on sand. You build it on something soft and fluffy that feels nice. Your house is going to fucking fall down. So hierarchy and prioritization is extraordinarily important, and we need that as the kind of foundation. The other stuff we can kind of bring in, and this is the thing that Bitcoin solves, is not the elimination or the removal of hierarchy and some, you know, interconnected version of the world. It's we get dynamic hierarchies that are precise and that stand as a function of competence, not by virtue of decree. So I think that's a super important nuance that I just wanted to bring up. The other piece was, you know, she mentions corporatism. And if you've read the Uncommunist Manifesto or you've heard me and Mark discuss it, we talk about this cronyism, which you'd place corporatism under that banner, if really, is this is a distortion of time preference and a function of the fact that a monopoly exists in the form of the state, which makes the game theoretical positioning of any corporate entity one that you want to go and make fucking friends with the monopolist. That's the winning strategy in a world in which a state exists, in which it has public authority over private property. You want to orient yourself to align with the state because that's how you're going to maximize impact. And a lot of this started, I mean, particularly with America, started with Rockefeller, right? America had really strong private property rights in the early days. Rockefeller made all his fucking riches, and then him and his organization went and partnered with the government, started lobbying, and they started getting public protection. They basically they solidified their fucking monopoly by virtue of the fact that the monopoly of the state existed. That's where the fucking problem was. So, you know, this, she mentions in here sort of, Bitcoin came forward to challenge this rigged game of survival of the fittest. Now, survival of the fittest is perfectly normal. And fittest, fit meaning adaptable, that which fits. It doesn't mean the one with the fucking six packs or the abs or it's the strongest, right? It's the most adaptable. It's the most functional. It's the most useful. It's the one that fits. That is the proper definition of fitness. It doesn't mean that you can run faster, longer, harder, right? That is useful in a race. It might not be useful if we're in a famine and, you know, the fat guy is more fit if we're in a famine than the fit guy, right? So he's probably going to outlive that guy. So in that sense, fitness is the opposite. So survival of the fittest is perfectly normal. And capitalism means like the goal of profit in a functional, organic society is, you know, it kind of directs and focuses and orients the entity that is out there producing a good or service to do it in the most effective and efficient way possible, such that the value they're delivering is greater than the input costs of the resources, energy, and time, right? Now, could that get out of whack? Could, you know, profit at any cost emerge in such a way that damage is done and resources are wasted, et cetera, et cetera? Yes, but where is that most likely? That is most likely in a paradigm where the cost of eroding that capital is borne by somebody else. So the classic example here is the Rothbardian one about the trees in the forest, right? You have the communist examples of the complete social centrally planned version. So they have a forest, they chop down all the fucking trees, and they give everybody the same amount of wood, right? Dictated by them. And because there's no market pricing of the wood, they don't know if they've chopped everything down or enough down or whatever. So they just chop fucking everything down. And that's what happened in communist China. They fucking chopped down all their forests. It was an abomination. It was a disaster over there. Soviets did the same thing. All the communists, they all did the same thing. They have no market pricing, so they don't know how to price demand. So then you have the modern liberal democratic variation of this, which is the government is the owner of the land. So you've got this public land. So they lease it out to an entity. They say, hey, you know, this entity is going to be able to measure the market prices better than we can as some centrally planned group of morons. So we'll lease it out and they can go and chop the trees down. So now what's the incentive for this entity? I mean, they don't own the capital stock itself. So they're going to go in, they're going to chop the fuck out of everything, and they're going to sell it for whatever price they can, so profit at any cost, because they don't have a cost. There's no capital there. They don't own the actual land. They don't have any private property. So they burn through the shit, and then they go and apply for a new license with somebody else, and they do the same thing over and over and over again. Now, the third option, and this is the option that you don't see much of because the world is so fucking backwards at the moment, but you're a private property owner. You own the land. You own the trees. And you want to go and chop some trees down to sell. Are you going to go and chop all your fucking trees down this year and have nothing next year to sell? Are you going to go and chop it all down without replanting and reinvigorating the capital base? No, you'd be a fucking idiot. I mean, maybe someone will do that. So maybe, you know, this is where monarchies and all that sort of stuff go wrong, right? You were the prudent father who built the land, and you planted a bunch of trees, and you created capital on that land, and then you chopped down enough trees and replanted them so that you could keep this business going. And then you have a dumbass son who's born, you pass away, and that dumbass son doesn't know anything. You didn't teach him, or whatever the case was, or he was born in such that his nature was fucking demonic. He goes and chops everything fucking down, and he doesn't give a crap. Because, hey, it's not his capital, or he didn't have to earn it in the first place, so he goes and chops it all down, and then he goes bankrupt. And then the competitor, who operates more intelligently, who takes care of the land and grows, he will prosper. Now, he's probably going to have to protect himself from this guy, so he's going to need to defend himself well. And this is where, I guess, if we are to combine together, and this is what Frederick Bastiat talks about as the law, is we group together to enforce the protection of private property rights. And this is sort of what we're missing today. And anyway, I just wanted to make this point that survival of the fittest is a beautiful thing, because that is how all nature and all of life works. Like, it is survival of the most adaptable. That is what fittest means. And when the environment is all fucking retarded, where the state exists. And mind you, we had to go through this process of a state emerging and all this sort of crap because we didn't have something, we didn't have the ingredients for energy money to emerge yet. So as much as I bash on the state and all this sort of stuff, it was a necessary evil that we had to fucking go through. We weren't going to go from Rome and discover Bitcoin next. Like there's a progression. So on a long enough time scale, the aberration that is the state is going to be a minor blip on the radar. Like we're gonna look back on this shit hundreds of years from now and say, fuck, we were dumb for a period there. But hey, lucky we're not that stupid anymore. Kind of in the similar way that we look back on the Nazism, you know, it was this kind of this raging flame that came and went very quickly. And if you know anything about Nazi history, like Hitler came and fucking went super quick. And on a longer, on a grander, broader timescale, the idea of the state is also going to be something that was a flash in the pan, you know, a couple hundred years, or depending on how, you know, the scope at which you want to argue the state existed, you know, do you want to go back to Rome, the Republic, etc. But whatever. From a evolutionary timescale, it is nothing. So survival of the fittest is going to exist before the state and after the state. And when the environment around it improves with the advent of something like energy money, then everything kind of progresses, everything gets better. It ties into the idea of, you know, BB and AB, right? After Bitcoin, it looks completely, completely different. The one other piece that I wanted to point out is this idea of, like, since World War II, the scientific sort of, establishment or whatever gets more interested in doing things more morally. And I don't know, this is a double-edged sword, right? I like the idea of doing science for science's sake, not for really moral reasons, because shit can get out of control. Like if we've seen the last 2 years, all the so-called I believe in science fucking maniacs basically wanted to turn the world into some sterile fucking prison, really, like, because the science said so. There was no inquiry into value judgments, like, because, and particularly into subjective value judgment, that was missing. We wanted to take an empirical approach, so it's kind of a little bit dangerous. Now, in some ways, obviously, you know, you see the rise of the cypherpunks and things like that. We've been able to, you know, create something like Bitcoin, which is, yes, it's a technology, it's a social phenomenon, but it's built upon a technological substrate. So it's extraordinarily important for us to have that. Now, this one's a tricky one. I don't know which way to go about it. Probably the best thing I can say is that you're going to have moral and, quote, immoral people develop things scientifically that we'll all use. But science is a tool, and the individual who uses that tool is the locus of the morality itself. And as immoral applications of technology emerge, so will more moral applications of technology. And I mean, Bitcoin being such a profound innovation, discovery, invention, whatever you want to fucking call it, it fusing action and value judgment and decision making to actual economic consequence, that will just orient and push us in a direction whereby we behave more morally, instinctually more morally, because Bitcoin is kind of rooted in private property. Like it is fucking property. And that's, without getting into too much of a tangent there, I think she does a really good job of actually mentioning that, is that we start to behave better by virtue of Bitcoin's existence. The part specifically that I want to touch on is where she talks about, with this feature, rather than a narrow short-sightedness, one is encouraged to hold a long-term view of the consequences of actions and to subdue the desire for instant gratification. So she's talking about time preference here, obviously. And this is fucking huge. Time preference is at the center of morality. It's at the center of behavior. It is how you make, as an individual, value judgments. And that is where, I guess, morality comes into being. And you would have heard me talk about morality in the past. I had to talk about it. I think me and Valis did a really good breakdown of, you know, what the hell is this thing, morality, right? It seems to be acting in accordance with, I don't know, instinct, intuition, and alignment with natural order, and in alignment with the largest number of people over the longest period of time. And I've butchered the fuck out of that definition, which I will come back to at some point in a future piece or a future take and dig into a little bit further. But this is what Bitcoin does. And I think the essence of this piece here is that it moves the impetus for morality away from institutionalized enforcement and back into instinctual action, like acting out as an individual. You orient yourself with a longer time horizon and more morally, because that is the optimum way to play the game, not because someone fucking told you so. So anyway, that's the final takeaway that I wanted to bring into this. So this was a fantastic piece. Nozomi and I will sit down and actually do a podcast. I want to do a whole series with her, actually, because she's got a whole lot of incredible insights, and her background in liberation psychology I find super interesting, and the discussion that we had also about psychopaths and everything, nature, nurture. There's a whole lot of stuff I want to dig in with her. Obviously, this fusion of masculine and feminine, I think that's super important. So stay tuned for more. Reminder, download Fountain, for the love of Christ. Get on there. We want to move away from Spotify and Apple and all these other garbage. Let's support the 2.0s. And check out uncommunist.com. Of course, fuck, almost forgot that. Enjoy the book. Enjoy this read. I'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Wake Up Podcast. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I'll try and read them each week and send you a shout out. And remember to grab a copy of the Uncommunist Manifesto and join us in defeating the plague that is consuming our world.